Welcome along to Under Construction. I'm Donal Cullen and this is Chadwick's award-winning podcast.
Yay!
I always leave time for applause. Coming up a little later in our Supplier's Corner, we're going to be joined by Des from Quilsha, but that's a little bit later on. Now we are chatting renovations and self-builds. And to help me navigate it all, I'm delighted to be joined by Cian Bonchois. Have I pronounced it correctly, Bonchois?
I haven't done it, but that's okay. I know. It's Cian Bonishaw.
Apologies,
yes. That's okay, Danica.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
We're also joined by an expert and an absolute bluffer today. So I'm delighted to welcome Stephanie O'Sullivan, a genius when it comes to renovations, and Carol Mullen, an absolute blackguard.
Yeah.
You're helping me today. Obviously, we're chatting self-builds and we'll go into our guests very shortly, but you might tell me about your role with Bowmet.
Yeah, thank you, Danica. As you mentioned, today we're going to talk about renovation and self-build. These are two key areas that I would very much focus in within my role in Chadwicks. Chadwicks have exclusivity of the Behmen brand in Ireland. Okay. Behmen essentially it's a German and Austrian brand that specializes in external wall insulation, renders, plastering and kind of line products. In my role, I would help a variety of customers such as DIYers, homeowners, builders, contractors, self-builds, BOR assessors, and a big part of self-build and renovation is making sure that they have the correct insulation system so that the house is comfortable year-round. Okay. And this is where the Behmet team and I come in to help these customers.
Brilliant. Well, Cian, delighted to have you along and helping us out today because we are joined by two great guests. One's an expert, one's a complete bluffer, but we're delighted to have them. Stephanie O'Sullivan and Carol Mullen, you are most welcome along to Under Construction. Okay, guys, let's get it done. Stephanie, I'll come to you. As an award-winning podcast, we appreciate other award winners. And your Cole Lane house, can you tell us a little bit about it? Because you also won an award.
Yeah, we did. So we built a house and we moved in the first day of lockdown.
Okay.
So it was, I think the length of the build was about a year and 3 months. So we purchased an old warehouse and we had to unfortunately knock most of it. We were hoping to try and keep some of it. And then we designed and built the house to suit where it was.
Stephanie, you've the skill set when it comes to the inside and your other half has
better.
Was there no chance?
Yeah.
But yeah. You have the skill set to take on a project like that, isn't that right?
Absolutely. This felt very comfortable for us, You know, we had been living in London for 7 years, living and working. My husband, Graham, had been involved with an awful lot of builds around the Barbican, which are very, you know, concrete orientated. And so we were kind of exposed to looking at alternative, ways to live, alternative opportunities. And so we had looked at houses and we were just shocked by the prices, even coming from London. You know, we were just shocked by the prices at the time and the amount of work that was going to be needed on the houses. And so we just kind of looked at the commercial opportunities and this warehouse was just there. And we couldn't believe it. We just took one look at it and we said, that's what we're doing.
You know.
Yeah. So we knew that there was huge potential there. A fraction of the cost of a house, you know. So.
Stephanie, we'll get into it. But Carol, for you, I was lucky enough to be in your house a number of times. You took on a renovation. How did you find the whole process? Was it your first time doing it?
So it was the first time doing a kind of a major renovation. So we extended out the back and we like knocked the wall between what we previously had a small kitchen and the living room. So we knocked the wall between them and then went out 30 square meters and, you know, just made it an open plan kitchen. But, you know, it was... Yeah, it was probably more of an undertaking than I even realized at the time, which is probably something that a lot of people find. You kind of think like, oh, grand, like, you know, you just you find the money to do it and then you pay someone to do it and that's it. I couldn't believe the amount of decision making there was involved, the amount of choice there was on different things. Like my head was fairly frazzled now as I was doing it, but it was great. It was very rewarding to do it.
Was it important for you? Because I stayed in your house and it was purely functional. Like, you know what I mean? I felt you didn't need to do something, but you wanted to put your stamp on that house.
I think it was that when we moved into this, we loved it. It's like a 1950s house. And I remember when we walked in to view it first, like there's coving on the, you know, between the wall and the ceilings. And there was, you know, lovely features like that. It felt like an old house. And we always bought it knowing it was going to be a bit of a doer-upper. But because the kitchen was so small, and then you had the living room, we always felt like if we were having people over, it felt very separate. It didn't feel like a very communal social space.
Yeah.
So that's why we decided, okay, right, we'll keep the rest. We kept the living room on its own. There was a living room to the front. So that's still separate. We didn't open the whole of downstairs out. That's very much like it used to be. And it still feels very old and homely, whereas it's a little bit more modern out now towards the back. So it was probably a case of just the functionality of family life. Also needing to just have more space. It was a small kitchen with two kids. We knew that we needed the space as well. So it was a kind of a juggling act in terms of loving the fact that it was an old house, but also then needing the functionality of like a new space.
Yeah, because things have changed, doesn't it? Like, Keane, we see that an awful lot. We were the same when we moved into our house. It was a dark, small kitchen, and we don't live like that anymore.
No, we don't. Like, and that's the whole issue with renovation, all that. It could be such a complex area where you could essentially go to a house like you did, or completely knock it down, or you could add on to an existing house. And so there's a lot of dynamics you have to bring in to make the house both functional, feel warm, spacious, but also practical for the for the people living in it. Mm. Absolutely. Like, it's complex in its process. Yeah.
Stephanie, you might take us through the highs and lows of it. Of course, you've experienced, but I could imagine that can make it a little bit more frustrating at times when you know how you want it to look and things get, you know, sidetracked or not go the way you would like them.
I think the biggest challenge for us was just time, right? So from that point of view, we knew exactly how to do it. We knew exactly what we wanted to do, and we knew kind of what level we wanted to achieve. And so for us, as full-time, you know, Graham was full-time architect, I was a full-time interior designer. We were working on very high level commercial projects, two kids.
Yeah, well.
Just the time to find what we wanted to do was really hard. Okay. So Graham managed to get it across the line in terms of like getting the design in and getting it to planning. But we did, you know, we work in an industry where we understand how important it is to reach out to the professionals. So, you know, first thing we did was, you know, we hired an engineer to look at the land. We paid someone also to do a dimension survey and, you know, survey on the levels. So we knew the different people and professionals we needed and when to get them in.
Yeah.
We had hoped to try and keep an element of the warehouse, but it turned out it was more of a glorified shed. There wasn't much there. However, the guy that was doing the demo work, he had use for nearly everything he took, which was great. We felt really good about that. We kind of just had this clean slate and we were able to go from there.
Yeah.
And how long did the planning take versus the actual build?
I mean, it was about the same length of time.
Was it,
you know, I mean, it was, I'd say if we had the time to do it all in one, it would have been more economical, but we kind of had to factor it into our lives. Like, we got planning pretty much straight away. For something that was quite unconventional, we got planning straight away. They had come back to say, you know, reduce the height and this. They didn't say by what. So we actually removed one bedroom, reduced the height slightly. I think all in all, it was like 3 months to get a planning.
Wow.
But then it was questioned by neighbours, and then it went to On Board Planola.
Mm.
I can't remember what the length of time it is in On Board Planola, but we, whatever that last date is, that was the date we got the decision back from On Board Planola, and they said to go ahead and build, there's no issues. So yeah, it was near, I would say, between buying the land and the warehouse to actually building, you know, it's a good 3 years.
That's brilliant, like, because it was a commercial building to begin with, and then you turn into residential, and like,
and
I drove
again,
in Dublin
like,
this morning, and the amount of commercial building that are vacant, it's crazy.
Like it's
a question, should we be thinking that way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when we were in London, it was just standard.
Mm.
Wow.
And I think there's this perception that it's difficult to change a property from commercial to residential or vice versa. It's not. It's a form.
I'll be honest with you, when you did say that it was significantly cheaper, part of me was gone.
It's hard because like we don't have an amazing abundance of cheap commercial. We were lucky with this one. We were very, very lucky again, because one thing I didn't mention was it actually came with a little house.
Yeah. Oh, no way.
Wow.
Which is full of leprechauns with pots of gold. Go on, Stephanie.
Ash, we're selling the house. We're looking for a commercial property.
The poxiest person of all time, Stephanie, but it sounds
like. I know this sounds like a fairy tale, but it was the most bizarre situation. So we were looking at just houses, and we came home and we went back online. We found the commercial warehouse. We went back down, got back into the car, asked the estate agent to meet us. And as we were walking down, so you have to go down like a road of houses. As we were turning to go down the laneway, it's this gorgeous little bungalow. And she just very nonchalantly said, "Oh, by the way, the warehouse comes with this." Right?
Yeah. I mean, right.
And I'll never forget it. She was walking on houses.
And would you check these lottery tickets for me?
and Graham and I just kind of looked at each other like,
Wow.
And she said it was never used as a residential property. It was the office. So the warehouse itself was like a leather goods warehouse.
Yeah, okay.
And then this little bungalow was their office. And so when we went into it, it was all pegboard walls. And what they used to do is they would pin up all the leather goods. You would come as the buyer, pick out your leather goods. The warehouse was where the product was stored. So we just like kind of like, oh my God. And we just kind of, is this for real? Yeah. And so you're going to be sick.
Oh, here we go. Then we took off the floorboards and we found.
No, you're going to be sick because that's good, right? So we said, even if we didn't get planning to build and turn the warehouse into a livable, there was cha-ching in this, you know, little bungalow at the end of a very good road.
Yeah.
And so we immediately changed it from commercial to residential. We hired a builder straight away. We put a bathroom on it. There was no bathroom on it, so we added in a bathroom. Became a one-bed house. And it's semi-detached, practically detached, to be honest with you. And we got tenants in immediately. And we got that valued, and it was $250,000. I'm not going to tell you what we paid for the whole thing, but it was fraction of that.
Amazing.
So even without, you know, getting the planning, we were.
But it shows you were thinking differently. You were thinking commercially as opposed to all of us.
Yeah.
You were swimming the other way, and
this
shows
is it.
There's a reward
for
it.
You know, and look, it's not everything as straightforward as that. We definitely landed on our feet, but I think what happened was our minds were open because of what we were exposed to in London. And I think this is something that people need to take into consideration when they're considering their professionals. Like some people say, do I even need an architect? Well, if you want some innovation, if you want your mind broadened and something different, yes, you know, that's the approach you should take. Because architects and designers, we are constantly feeding off what's around us. We're traveling, we're constantly taking it in. We're bringing that level of expertise and some other ways of thinking. The fact my laundry room is upstairs blows people's minds.
Okay.
Something so simple, but I never once questioned it because it makes so much more sense, unless it's a bungalow. All your bedrooms are upstairs. Why shouldn't your laundry room be upstairs? Why are we dragging everything from upstairs through the living room, through the kitchen, and into a utility room?
It's madness.
Am I blowing your mind?
I'm going to walk into my house and like, I hate this house.
Carol is actually crying. Will you please stop? Because Stephanie, you had the experience, but Carol, not being harsh, I know you wear like all the gear and you looked the part, but your DIY experience, where's that at?
It is very much limited. I would be like, anything I do starts with opening up YouTube. That's where we're at, like, you know. But I have to say, that was a real lesson with doing the big renovation was like the value in getting people who are experts in doing things, because I couldn't believe it. Like, say the first day of our build, you know, not that I would have been knocking anything or I would have been like taking down walls myself, but like the first day of our build, I remember leaving the house. It was while I was doing dancing. It was one of my days and I was off rehearsing.
Sorry, we better... Carl won Dancing with the Stars. Sorry, you know what I mean? And now he's on an award-winning...
How long are we into the podcast now? All right,
it's an award-winning podcast with a Dancing with the Stars champion.
But I went
off... Stephanie won the lottery.
I don't know what I did. You know, I'm still trying to figure out here.
Will you go get coffee, Steve? Yeah. I'll go with you.
You're half French. That's a good win. True. I went off rehearsing for the day, and when I left, the house was entirely intact. It was the first day of the build. And when I came back, the back of the house was gone. I remember walking in and being like, where's the house? Like, it was just gone. And they were like, well, yeah, when you have the gear, like, you're able to do it, like, you know. And it was incredible to see when you have people who know what they're at, how efficient they can be and how, you know, how quickly you can get things done and to such a standard. Whereas with me, when it comes to doing things, like, I would be very much... I've a good gauge on what I will and won't be able to do. And if I look it up on YouTube and it looks too complicated, generally the next step in the process is I ring my friend Kev.
Okay.
Because Kev is the one who actually knows what he's doing when it comes to DIY. And then if Kev can't do it, I ring Jay, our builder. So it's like I move it up the chain.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a good way to be, that you would actually fancy having a go off at first. Because not being fair, you've been around me. There is no chance I would take any task on like that. But just in it, so where was your first port of call? Carl, when you thought I'm going to take on, we're going, myself and Ash are going to do the house, where did you start, or was it all so daunting for you?
It is a bit daunting, like, because also as well, when you like, there's so many decisions that you could make. So like, if you decide, like, if we had, you know, if I was to start again and if I was able to do it, you know, if we'd bought the house, I probably would try and get the money together, or even leave the house vacant for a little while until I could get the money to do the work before we moved in, you know, where, but that wasn't an option. We couldn't do that. So what happened with us with the house was the first thing we needed to do was quite an old bathroom. It was really old school, where the toilet was actually in a separate room to the bathroom. And that just wasn't really fit for purpose for us. Like, cause we wanted, at the time we didn't have kids. We wanted kids. We needed a bath, all of those things. So that was the first job we got done in the house. And then we found out that Ash was pregnant with our first baby, Davy. And it was, we were still kind of in the lockdown period. So it was very hard to get a builder. And we realized, okay, the house is like, it's fine for us at the moment. We knew we were going to be getting work down the line, but we were like, it's too cold up here for a baby. So decided with the lads, Kev, my friend. Okay, knows how to do things.
He went up the line.
He went up the line to Kev. And I was like, Kev.
You're there with your like rubber hammer going, it's time to get Kev in.
I just can't heat the place up. And I was like, look, you know, I want to insulate the house, but what are my options? And he was like, well, you could get a wrap done around the outside, or, you know, you could get warm board and put it on the inside. And he was like, I could help you do that. I've done that myself in my house. So we went to Chadwick's and Robin Hood. Mm-hmm. And when I tell you, God love the lads there. I hadn't a clue.
There's videos, don't worry.
There's one up on Chadwick's social media. Like, you've been intimidated. But Carl, that's genuinely most of us when we go into builders providers like that. It's not when you don't know the game as well as other people.
What you find is when you ask the question, everyone's delighted to help. Yeah. Like, I remember that, going to get the warm board and walking through the warehouse, and there was kind of a bit of interest, and like, oh, what are you doing and how are you doing it? And do you have someone coming in to do it? And then they kind of loved the fact that we were doing it ourselves. Yeah. And
because they know you'd be back 20 more times.
They're upselling.
But the amazing thing was, with that, the only thing we needed to do in terms of hiring in someone else was a plasterer. Like, everything else we actually were able to do ourselves. And I couldn't believe, essentially all you're doing is getting a bit of insulation and you're banging it onto the wall. That was kind of it, and cutting it into the shape so it fits. And it was great. So at least the house was warm upstairs when Davey arrived. And then we always knew that the big renovation was going to come. And that was very much a case of, we had learned our lesson. We'd started some jobs and then thought, oh, actually, we should have done this job before we did that job. So downstairs, we said, we're not touching it until we're doing it properly. So
you lived in the house while all the work was happening?
We moved out I think 3 months, 3 or 4 months, because it was the dust, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, probably could have made it work if we hadn't had kids, but the fact as well, it was the kitchen. So like, we didn't have anywhere to cook or anything like that. So it was, I would say, if you're getting work done, if you can move out, I think it's probably the better option. That's what my experience was anyway.
Very good. And like, it's great that you took this on yourself, like, because rarely people do that now. Like, you know, like,
well, that's interesting. Millennials, we're kind of get someone to do it for us. You're quite rare. You know, you're a millennial.
Am I?
Yeah, okay. You just make it by a few days.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
When
so,
was your birthday there?
I was 1990. Yeah.
There you go. So you're quite unique in the fact that you'd actually roll up your sleeves and do a bit.
Yeah, I would, but it's a. But I enjoy it. I kind of like the process of doing. I like following instructions. I like if someone can like tell me, okay, you do this, you do that, you do this. But then it does come to a stage where I'm like if I'm going into a wall, I'm like, is there a wire or a pipe behind there? Like, what kind of damage?
You do it or you don't drill.
What kind of damage?
I can see as you're drilling. Yeah. Don't ever take his advice on this.
We might just knock the electricity off the box just in case. You know, when I'm getting into that level, I'm like, maybe I need to ring someone.
The intimidation side of it, for you, it probably wasn't that daunting because you work in this industry all the time.
No, it wasn't. Mm. You know, I felt very comfortable with it. I mean, I know it's not for everybody, you know, I know, but it's something I'm so comfortable with. And I actually love going into builders providers. I don't know an awful lot about construction, you know, but I have no issues asking the questions. Yeah. So it's not everybody has that experience.
And that's probably the takeaway. It is actually going there. Like Carol's saying, everyone's there to help you. They're rooting for you. Asking the question and letting people know what you're doing.
No, it is like I suppose I'd work with a lot of different customers from architects to DIYers, and it's great that when people do ask questions, like, because, you know, they want to know the answer, they want to get the facts right, they want to get the right trade, they want to get the right information. So I love it when people ask me questions, because you go with them on their journey to make their house a better home for themselves. So it's brilliant that you never be afraid to ask questions.
For both of you, what was the biggest challenge? Something that blindsided you? You didn't expect it. Even Stephanie, with all your experience, that you were probably rocked on your heels a little bit and thought, yeah, that was harder than I gave it credit.
There was no challenge other than actually we had difficulty finding a builder.
Okay, no way.
It's just the build was so difficult. Mm-hmm. So that was really the main challenge. But we did find an amazing builder in the end. Access to the property and stuff like that. But I don't really feel like I had anything monumental that was challenging, but that's my background.
What about for you, Carol?
I think for me, I probably only towards the end of the build realized I was doing this, but a lot of the time I was taking on the stress of, you know, because naturally what happens with a build is like there's problems that you can run into or like things that, you know, you might have said we're going to do it this way, but now we're going to do it that way. And whenever the builders would run into a problem, I'd be kind of stressing about it, going, oh God, what are we going to do here? Not realizing that, like, that's their job and that's what they do every day. They're problem solvers more than anything. So actually, like, it didn't matter what I thought. They were going to just find
the solution.
A solution for it.
Yeah.
Whereas even if they're going like, oh God, what are we going to do here? I'm thinking, oh God, this is going to cost me like another 10 grand to get this fixed. That's where my head was going. And then you come back a few hours later, I'm like, oh yeah, that's sorted, you know?
Yeah.
And the other thing as well for me was the sequencing of things. So like I was never enough steps ahead of myself. So then a question would come of like, have you thought about where this is going? Or have you thought about that, where that is going? And I'd be thinking, how are we at that point already? It's still a shell of a room.
Yeah.
So trying to get my head into that space. That's where something like an architect would have been really helpful. Well, or a designer.
It's so important.
Yeah.
Like, it's so important. Our builder said they had never had as many drawings as they had from us and specifications and schedules. I had everything down to the hinge and the handle on the door planned. Nothing came up on site over the year and 3 months where we had to make a decision.
Well, there's a big difference, Stephanie. Like I say, if he drew another picture of the house, his builder would be like, this looks like a 4-year-old and put it on the fridge. Well, don't care, you're doing great. It just brings me back to rugby. But before you go for a Saturday game, the last thing you do is, it's called the captain's run. And it's basically for anyone to tidy up something that they're not sure of the whole process for it, so that you can finish that session. And you know, okay, everything's right now.
Absolutely.
We can go perform because...
And I'm sure you know, once you have everything planned, if something has to change, it's much easier to manage that change and pivot and manage the price, because you've seen, you know, okay, well, we thought we were getting a bat. They mm-hmm. no longer have it in stock. We need to get a similar bat. We know it was that much. The, you know, the connection to the waste was at that end. We need to make sure it's at the same end, you know, so yeah. you have all the information. So going back to the builders, providers, or whatever, it's much easier. And schedules, like, I mean, as a designer, I shouldn't love Excel, but actually, you know, when I'm going anywhere with a client, I have a list of all the doors in the house, and I'm like, you know,
I could have done with this.
The next one, Carl.
Yeah, but you're not the norm, Stephanie, to be fair, isn't it? Because the majority of us do get intimidated. So what advice would you give to someone listening, a bit like Carl and myself, that would be daunted?
Well, there's two things, right? First of all, talk to your partner, whoever you're doing this with, right? You need to sit down. It's like I was saying this beforehand. There's pre-marriage courses. There should be pre-build courses.
Oh, whoa, now we're talking. Yeah. Yes, brilliant. Can we dress Carl
also
up?
Probably done with that. Yeah.
No, it's just our build is testament to how much planning up front really makes to the process. So I'd say to anyone, right, just sit down, make a list. Number one, brief. What do you genuinely want? What is the point of this? Why are you doing this? Do you really need to extend? Just draw the outline, put some dimensions in, put some elements onto it if you are that way inclined. If you're not, just list it and then break it down into elements. So, you know, if you're changing all the doors in the house, like list them all out. Door one, door two, basic stuff. Mm. How many handles is that? How many are painted? How many have glass? Okay, put a price against that. Keep going until you have something measurable and it's purely analytical.
Yeah.
And suddenly you see, right, there's so much to do. But actually, if you break it down, it's totally manageable. So if we do that, then that means we can do that then.
It's amazing. You say, sorry, I'm going back to a previous life again, but I'll never forget a teammate of mine, Simon Eastby. I don't mind naming him because he's exactly that type of a character. But he drew his extension out on the pitch that we were training near, because he couldn't decide on where the door should go. So he marked it out on lino tape. And then all of us, there was about 12 of us sitting around going, no, if you put the doors there, you can't put a couch.
How did the World Cup in 2007 go so badly?
We're all out the back going, Simon, do you ever think of getting a sliding door? That could do it.
Wow.
Just in terms of that, like even the visualisation, I can't visualise something unless it's in front of me. And actually, again, that would have been something that it really would have helped me to have, you know, myself and my wife Ash in the room, or even for the two of us to draw it out together, because we noticed that a few times we had discussed things and I was going, yeah, that sounds great. And then it had come to chatting about it through the builder and I'd be saying that one thing and Ash would be saying, that's not what we spoke about.
Exactly.
But I had visualised it entirely differently in my head and had a clue what I was at, like, you know. So having it on paper would definitely be really useful.
Oh, absolutely. Just prepare.
Yeah, the Roy Keane line, fail to prepare to fail.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Check that away. Like, now you know why we win awards around here.
Lead times, definitely. On various building material, and we live in a world that's constantly changing, you know, with Ukraine and Israel and all that, and all the issues globally, like there have massive consequences on material. Like, so like you said, plan from the beginning, make decisions early, and then you should have a smooth sailing in terms of construction. Carol, for yourself, in terms of, did the builder really help you into your extension, or did you make decisions yourself? Did you bring some trades in, or how was that whole process with yourself?
Jay was great, our builder. Like just a great character as well, like very a lovely guy to be around and great fun, but very helpful as well, because generally what had happened is we go into the room and he'd take the mick out of me for not having a clue what I was at, and once we were over that, then he'd get into no, this is why I think this would work better. And he was really good as well as a builder, because if he could spot a way to do something differently but that would cost less money, he would bring us through that option and talk us through it and why he thought it might be a better option. So say, for example, like, you know, if you knock this much wall, it's going to cost you X amount in steel, whereas if you knock this amount of wall, it'll be a little bit less, or whatever it might be. When we'd be saying, oh, if we do this, if we did that, And then he kind of say to us, yeah, but think about it. Your door is here and you're going to be opening the door into this thing. And you're thinking, all right, I never thought about that. So, and he organized everything, like all the trades in terms of, we did this very much start to finish through our builder.
That expertise is invaluable, really, when you think about it. And like, did he just build the extension in terms of retrofit? Did he help you towards that? Or did you change your heat pump? Did you insulate your attic? Or did you do any of these steps as well?
No. So we had done a few of those things in the house. And this is why I say I kind of retrospectively would have preferred to have done it all in one go. So when we got into the house, the first job we had to do was the plumbing. Mm. But we had done the plumbing like upstairs and downstairs, but hadn't done it with the build in mind. So actually, a lot of the plumbing we had put in had to get changed and rads had to move and all of that stuff. So it was money that, like, I wouldn't say it was a waste, but like, you know, it could have been definitely used more efficiently if we'd done it the right way around. So he, like, they helped us insulate. I had done upstairs when Davey was born, but then they insulated downstairs. And we had thought again about like the wrap, but because upstairs was already done, we decided to warm board downstairs. So they did all of that downstairs. We had a new boiler installed, but again, would love to do something like a heat pump now down the line, or look at solar panels, whatever it might be.
And have you felt a difference since before and after? Like in terms of comfort, have you seen that difference?
Yeah, there's been a huge difference in the house, definitely. And like, you know, I suppose when we first bought it, it was an old house and it was a cold house. And it had like, when I think about it now, the windows seem paper thin. Mm. But it's amazing how like each step just makes a difference. And to the point now where something small, like having a, like the small bathroom window open even a little bit and you walk into the room, you're like, oh, it's cold in here. Because you notice it straight away. So that's probably a real sign of how now it is insulated.
Well, like that's one of the hardest pieces in retrofit is that, yes, you're making the house warmer. Yes, you're going to reduce your energy bill and all that, but it's the comfort.
Yeah.
You touched on something there, Mull, because I know you like having fun and the bit of crack. Is there any better crack than building site crack? Like, honestly, hang around with Jay there. Are you like, you were legging it away from breakfast to just honestly hang around with him.
They were unbelievable crack. So he had set up a WhatsApp group with us, and you know, he'd keep us up to speed nearly with some of the stuff that was going on site, like where they were having a laugh. I remember one of them was one of the builders, he was an apprentice, of course it was the apprentice. And they were taking down some tiles up. This was when they were doing the bathroom, actually, previous to the big build, but they were taking down some tiles in the old bathroom, and he threw it out the window and not realizing that there was a glass table downstairs. And Jay rang me and he goes, see that glass table that's out the back garden? I said, yeah. And he goes, was that intact when we came here? I said, it was. And he was like, right, yeah, we owe you a table. And then I realized I had it on the camera outside.
Of course, content.
He was like, send me the footage now. But by the time I got back to the house, the lads, because they knew there was tiles going up, they were drawing diagrams of your man firing the tile out the window just to take the mick out of him. Another thing they did on site was, there was two apprentices on site.
Honest.
And they asked the two apprentices, have you got your wheelbarrow license? The two lads were like, no. And they were like, oh, well, it's good. We have the instructor coming in today. So they set up a course around the house and then to bring it out into the skip out the front. And the lads were timed. But if they spilled anything, there was a time penalty. And they filmed the lads doing this course. And even a little bit like, oh, no, that's going to be added on now to your time. And they were told to go back to like guidance counselors and they'd give them the certificate at the end. It was just them taking the absolute mix.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And you're paying for all that. Yeah. Fair play to Jay in the end. Stephanie, a big problem though, Carla, I don't know, did you find it, but anyone taking on a project like that is the decision making, the fatigue from it come the end, especially when it comes to colours and all sorts of it. Have you any advice on that, or did you find that you had a problem with that yourself?
I wouldn't say I would have got fatigue or anything like that. It was more just, you know, do I really, really need that other light there? You know, just small little details, which designers tend to agonize over. Yeah. But
did you find it helpful, so, for giving you an understanding of your client then? You know, when they come to you with that and you just can't see why they can't make a decision, and now you've probably...
I think we're forgetting to, it's going to get a little bit deep, but I think we're forgetting to actually look at ourselves and actually just take a moment and say, Like, what is it that, how do I want to live? Mm-hmm. How do I really want to live? Now, we saw how the world changed and how our lives have changed with COVID and working from home. Okay. So there's been a huge shift in how people want to live in their homes. There's been a new appreciation for how much they care about their home. And, you know, something that there's a few areas of it that have, you know, come to light. And so I think as part of the process, when I'm sitting down with clients, I'm expanding now more on the brief side. So when I say to someone, what's your brief? They give me a shopping list. Mm-hmm. I want 2 bathrooms, a kitchen and a living room. That's not a brief. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I've had some consultations where the homeowner was absolutely certain they wanted a bath at a window. Yeah. It was really affecting the layout of this ensuite. And I was saying, the bath in this position is compromising everything. I'm just using this as an example.
Yeah, of course.
But she just had in her head that, you know, she needed a bath by the window. I was like, why do you need it? I was like, you're not even going to be able to look out on it because it's on ground level and there's a patio outside where people are going to be. So half the time, the blind is going to be down. And she's like, and I said, when do you take baths? She's like, I actually don't take baths. And then I said, if you were to take a bath, what time of the day would you take a bath? And she said, nighttime. And I said, so are you going to have the blinds open? Mm. Are you going to see the views? That she's like, no, I'm just going to have the candles on. And I said, right, so what about this?
Yeah. Okay.
And so I, you know, each, and that's just one small example, like critical thinking, questioning everything. Sensory needs, like the big light.
The big light.
No one needs a big light.
No one needs a big light. Yes. No one, yes. Yeah. If we take nothing from today, it's like, the big light.
You know, why am I in a bad mood? Oh, yeah, the light's on.
Yeah.
Right? And you just, right? So I have taken away the big lights from all layouts that come my way and I change it to softer lighting. So, and, you know, it's funny because you'll get people going, actually, I actually hate the lights on. All the time, I feel like I can't relax. And so it's like, right, I've just halved the amount you're going to spend.
Yeah.
You don't need that. And it's so it's there is a huge process involved.
It just when you were saying as well about like taking a look at what you genuinely want as well as a person. We actually, now that you say that, because of lockdown, that definitely influenced the way we just wanted our house to be, because during lockdown, when you couldn't have people over to the house and when you couldn't have family or friends, whatever it might be, it made us realize how much we're like social creatures and we want that, and we want our house to be somewhere where you can bring people over. And that was very much that formed the thought process of having an open space. And we have a big island that we can have people sit at, and we have a dining room table in the kitchen as well. And we wanted somewhere where we could all be in the same room and to be able to host people, but not have to leave to cook or to get them a drink or whatever it might be. But it was definitely that time away from people made us realize how much we wanted that, you know?
Yeah, and it really had an impact on a lot of people, you know, working from home. And I think everyone wants those open plan spaces. And actually, we need to just be very mindful that there can be a sensory nightmare, and not having one space somewhere else. That's not the living room. That's not the bedroom. Just something somewhere that someone can go when they need quiet space or just some is really important. So, and that has come about. That's one thing, you know, that came about for me in lockdown was I've nowhere to go, you know, literally.
But that's our house. When the big light goes on, they know it's homework. You know, so everyone dreads the big light going on. It's like, oh no, it's homework time.
Here we go again.
Stephanie, people listening, just where could they look for inspiration? Obviously, you're in the industry, so you see it every day. But if you're, you know, like the two of us, where would you say to your normal person to go and get inspired for a renovation or a self-build?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, right? Yeah, okay. There's so much noise out there.
And not being harsh, but social media is a disaster with it too, in terms of
disaster. Everybody's a professional now. They build an extension and they can suddenly they're giving consultations online. Not Carl.
I don't mind Carl, at least he lives in Ireland. But when you're watching stuff with different climates and they have a different idea.
When I have clients coming to me with examples of houses they want, and they're in Australia. All right, we have to be realistic. So I would say, number one, step away from Pinterest. Just step away from it. Do not go looking at Pinterest until you have given yourself that brief.
Yeah.
And actually outlined what it is that you intend to do. Pinterest is really difficult because it pushes forward all the trends. It's so busy, right, that it's actually hard to see what you need off it. It's great for when you know what you want and you're looking for some examples of that. So I would say, first of all, if you're building in Ireland, look at architects in Ireland and look at their websites and look at projects precedence. So don't, you know, go looking at something like Pinterest, which is just a mix and gathering of everything from everywhere. Actually, go find something similar to where you are and what you need. So there's also, you know, great publications out there that are all online. And, you know, you can look up the RIAI and you can find some architects' names, go to their websites, look for those. Architects Journal is brilliant because it has layouts as well. So it's not just pretty pictures. Yeah. You can actually see layouts on there. So it's like, start where you are and search, because everything's out there.
You just
have to know how to find that right thing.
Absolutely. Like when you look at self-builds or new builds, like there is your traditional build and there is ICF, there's timber frame, there's steel frame structure, there is the SIM system that's coming online that Chadwicks were doing. Like even factory built houses where you literally go into a factory line and you come out of the factory and it's flat pack and then the next day it's a full on house. Like so there is so many variants and so many benefits to some builds and disadvantage on others, but you've nailed it on the head. Pinterest, and sometimes you look at a house in Australia and says, that's what I want, but it's not suited for the Irish climate. It's not suited for the environment that we're in. I mean, if we looked at the storms we've had in the last couple of weeks, you know, other countries in Europe or even outside of Europe don't get the weather that we get in Ireland. So it is important to pick the right build for the right area with the right architect and the right builder. And if you can combine all that, you will have a fabulous home. And I suppose, and echoing what you're saying, the a lot of magazines out there exist. There's also the likes of the Self-Build Show, a lot of trade shows that exist. And even in terms of Chadwicks, we can try and point you in the right direction or help you out as much as we can.
Carl, you've actually slag about the Irish cold. I love that. You've taken it off the whole time. It's a different type of cold.
It's a different kind of cold.
Maronja, you're big on social media, but how was it easy for you to separate from the trends and to keep an eye on what you needed for right now for your family?
Yeah, well, look, and like I'd have to give Ash, like, you know, 99% of the credit for that. She was brilliant. Like Ash's...
I'm actually odd. You took a percent off her.
What did she do?
She does everything.
She, you know, she was really good at, you know, being able to talk me through what she wanted and why. And generally, like, unless I really didn't like something or, you know, for the most part, I just completely trusted her with it. She was really good. And I'm delighted with all of it. Like, you know, there's... everything she thought about was very much a case of having that space where it was a social gathering space, but also with kids in mind and all of us being able to eat together as a family and having it as a communal space. So, you know, it was, it was definitely, it was a two-person project, but with one person very much making more of the decisions. And I was happy about that.
Keane, last year we were lucky enough to be joined by Harrison Gardner. Obviously, we got Carl Mullen this year. So I do want to chat about sustainability still. You might take us through, you know, the importance of sustainability in this process.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a massive part, and you hear sustainability every day and you just turn on the radio and there's an ad about BER, get your house BER assessed. There is green mortgages and everything. I was interesting, Carl, you mentioned you got your BER rating when you bought the house, but you haven't really looked at it since. And then you mentioned the bank told you could get a cheaper mortgage.
Yeah. So our house, I think it was an F or even lower when we bought it. And then So we haven't had it assessed since, and I would like to do it, one, out of curiosity to see where it's at. Mm. But the reason why I didn't get it done for the bank was it was all around the time when the rates were changing really, really quickly. And we'd just got approved like to top up the mortgage to get work done. And we were in the middle of switching as well at the same time. Mm. And in order to lock in the rate, we kind of just had to go with it. And there wasn't going to be time to get the BER rating done. But it's still something that will probably be worth me doing, because when we come out of the term that we're on now for our mortgage, like, there was cheaper rates available if you had a B, I think it was a B3 or higher.
Yeah, it's B3.
So
yeah.
Like, I'd be interested to see. I'd be very surprised that we're at a B3 now. You know, I know we've done a lot of work, but there's definitely more that we could do. But it would be great even to get the rating done to know where we're at, and okay, then to know what else we could be doing.
Well, where you could look in terms, definitely get a BER assessment. Like, a BER assessment can cost in between 250 to 350 euro. You can get that information on the SEA website, and local to your area, you can pick a couple of BER assessors in the area, which I'd highly recommend. Mm. Also, last year on the Win an Award podcast,
well done you.
I can leave that. You had David Shield from yourretrofit.ie. Yes. Not sure if you know the platform. So yourretrofit.ie essentially is a platform that takes all of the information from a BER assessment that that a typical house would have. So for example, when a BER assessor will come to your house, Karen, because he is going to come to your house.
Yeah.
He's going to take over 700 data points from your house. So he's going to take so much information from your house. And I suppose he's going to compute everything on a 2-page.
Okay.
It'll mean probably nothing to you, but actually it kind of opens the house and actually analyze the house in terms of what you have in your walls, what you have in your attic, and actually is a really useful tool for you to take on a journey and how can I retrofit my house even further. So essentially, once you have your BER assessment done, you go into yourretrofit.ie, you enter your details, okay, and then you will have your house come up on the homepage. It'll have your address, it'll have the BER rating and everything. And they'll have 9 criterias in terms of where your house is losing or it's actually well performing compared to others. One of these could be walls, attic, floors, ventilation, solar panels or renewables, heating system. So it has a little chart from 1 to 5, 5 being the best, 1 being the worst. So it's a really useful tool. You just put in your address and it tells you exactly where you should, what key areas within your home you should work on.
Yeah.
Once you have that done, then you can make an appointment with Chadwicks, and we have eco centers all over Chadwicks in our 37 locations. And you could talk to one of our representatives who will go through a plan of attack as such in terms of what you should do or what can you do in your house to bring your house from an F to a B3 for a low mortgage or even higher if possible. It'll tell you how much carbon emission you're reducing by retrofitting. So it is a fantastic tool. So get your house BER assessed.
We'll book them in for the morning.
Exactly. We'll go through it together.
It's an early time for us to get out here. Stephanie, there's a big area we haven't touched on, though, a roundabout way and wrapping us up. Budget, always really important. But you said something earlier on in the conversation that I thought was really interesting. Time. It's like you value time as well. Factoring that into the budget.
Yeah, absolutely. Our time is our biggest value. So I think you can save time by planning things properly, like I said, and managing a budget from the start is making sure you have everything listed out with a cost associated with it. So there should be no surprises, really.
Yeah.
And you can keep on top of that budget.
Advice to yourselves starting out again, you know what I mean? If you were to look back just before you kicked off, what would you like to kind of say to yourself? And
I would talk to someone who can help genuinely. Like, I'm delighted where we're at with the house, and you know, I enjoyed doing it that way that we did it, but I definitely know there was a more efficient route there, and also as well, like, there's things that we have done, and you know, small things where, like, we open a door a certain way and we're like, oh God, if we actually had that switch there, it would have been a little bit better. And that's the detail someone like you could pick up.
Yeah.
So that's what I would definitely say.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Stephanie, you run masterclass in self-build, don't you?
I am developing one at the moment. So based on the, so you know, what happened with lockdown was I had to kind of pivot. Yeah. Mm. And so I went fully online. Mm. And actually, that virtual consultation process became more popular. And it was, as I said, I was seeing the same things happening. So I kind of researched and I realized there isn't a one-stop shop for someone to go and actually educate themselves on what the process is for self-building or renovating or extending or whatever. And I'm taking all the experience I've had over the last kind of 4 years of this seeing the same things happening. There's a hunger out there for people to actually be educated around it, like yourself. And so I'm developing a masterclass where people will be able to sign up and bring either the stuff that they're hoping to do and their plans or whatever, or they know maybe down the line 2 or 3 years they're going to be doing this work, and they will get all the sort of processes I use. All right. So schedules and information, whatever it is, and be in a room. It won't be online, possibly followed up online. But yeah.
That's sounds brilliant. It sounds exactly like your pre-marriage course, pre-building course,
there
isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty much. Could that's you dress brilliant. Up as a priest? And you know what I mean? Myself and Carol will dress up like altar boys and we're away.
I hired.
We leave it there, guys. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Under Construction. A massive thank you to Stephanie, Cian and Carol Mullen. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
You. Take care.
Brilliant. Welcome back to Under Construction. It is time for our Supplier's Corner. Patrick's here to help me out and get me from stop embarrassing myself and asking silly questions. I promise I won't be this embarrassing this week, Patrick. And we're delighted to be joined by Des O'Toole from Caolte. Des, how are you?
All good, yeah.
You might give us a little history of Caolte.
I suppose essentially what do Caolte do? We grow the trees. We supply the logs to the forest product sector. So if you take your customers in Chadwicks would be sawmills, for example. They purchase the logs from us. We harvest the bottom part of the tree, the large diameter cross-section of the tree. It goes into the sawmills. These mills operate state-of-the-art facilities. They cut, dry, you know, grade that timber to European standards and supply construction-grade wood, pallet, packaging, fencing, etc. All of the products you'd see in Chadwick's branches throughout the country. The top section of the tree, which is the smaller diameter stuff, that predominantly goes to the panel board mills, and that would go into manufacture oriented strand board or MDF. So they're panel products made by the likes of Smartply and Medite. Again, two brand names that you'd see in every Chadwick's branch around the country, you know.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because I've been to some of these mills. Antonica, you probably have as well, I'm sure. But they use every single piece of the tree, and every piece has a purpose, and they cut them. It's a whole technology in itself.
Absolutely, Patrick. Nothing goes to waste. I suppose the main products they produce come from the log itself, and then all of the waste material. It usually either goes into biomass for heat and energy for the plant. So a lot of the sawmills would be very self-sufficient from an energy perspective, and they'd use the waste material like the sawdust, etc., to produce heat in their boilers, which then would dry the wood in the kilns, which ultimately ensures the product that lands on your trade counter is you know, the right moisture content. And similarly, some of the mills would actually produce pellets as well that would be sold domestically, for example, for commercial biomass boilers.
Amazing. So it's sustainability with a capital S, really.
Yeah, the full circular economy in action, absolutely.
Amazing industry. Tell us more about the importance for all of us to look towards building more with wood.
Where do I start? Construction needs to decarbonize, okay? The built environment, when it comes to, you know, buildings and construction itself, it represents about 38% of carbon emissions on the planet, I suppose.
Wow.
You know, of all emissions, 38% come from the construction sector. So timber is one of the most sustainable building materials we have. The trees themselves, when they're growing, they're sequestering carbon. They're taking that carbon out of the atmosphere and storing it. And then ultimately, when we produce building products and use those products then on construction sites, in our buildings and for the fabric of our, you know, our walls and floors, etc., it's stored long life. you know, for a lengthy period. That wood itself then, you know, it goes into modern methods of construction, timber frame. You know, we can build those fast homes, we can build them sustainably. And I suppose as well, one of the big benefits of using certainly homegrown timber is you're supporting the local economy. You know, the whole supply chain across, you know, from seed right through to end market, you know, the harvesting contractors, the sawmills, the board mills, all of the jobs that we support by homegrown timber, you're supporting that sector, I suppose.
Like, I know in Chadwick's, about 95% of everything we do, everything we sell is homegrown Irish timber. And we do that purposely for all those reasons you talked about, from a sustainability point of view, but also from a supporting Irish jobs.
I bet we do that quite well. You know what I mean? That we compete on a world stage for the product we
compete
produce
internationally. Certainly the forest product sector itself has probably invested just in the region of about 200 million euros over the last 5 years. State-of-the-art facilities, you know, drying technology, processing technology, precision engineering in terms of the quality of the products they produce. And they do compete with imports.
What are the barriers there, or the challenges?
The challenges to using timber in construction, I suppose it falls probably into maybe three categories. And I can talk about each one of them. One would be to do with the regulatory environment. The other one would be probably to education and training of our specifiers. And the third would probably be around demonstration, kind of proof of concept. If I take each of them in turn, timber is classed as a combustible material. Within our building regs, it's classed as class A2. And there are limits with the Irish building regulations in terms of what you can and cannot build with timber. One of the limits, for example, would be to do with story heights. In Ireland, you typically can't build over three stories in timber frame or mass timber, which is a newer type of product that's coming to market. Other jurisdictions around Europe, North America, they can build 20 stories. So we need to look to the fire regulations, to the building codes around Europe and understand, I suppose, what is it that they are doing and how are they doing what they're doing so that we can potentially amend our building regulations here to allow us to go safely, you know, higher, for example, with timber. The other side of regulation would be 100% we need to bring forward embodied carbon legislation. So in simple terms, when you buy a new home, we all look at the BER of the house, you know, how energy efficient is the home? How much is that home going to cost to heat, for example? But what the BER is not telling you is the carbon footprint of the fabric of the building. It's not telling you, you know, how much energy or emissions went into actually producing that house in the first place. And there's a big chunk, you know, I mentioned, you know, construction is 38% of all carbon emissions. So if we focus on the fabric, if we focus on the materials we use and obviously choose low carbon materials, that's better for everybody. It's better for the environment. It's better for climate. But without embodied carbon legislation, that's not going to happen. The other one I said was education and training. And we don't have a culture of building with timber in Ireland. You know, we're a traditional masonry, you know, masonry, steel, concrete construction sector. And timber would the use of timber would be relatively low compared to some of our European counterparts. So we need to train, we need to provide the tools, we need to provide the resources for those architects to be comfortable to design with timber. We have developed an asset, for example, called timberspec.ie that I think some of your listeners might have a look at. They're on free online CPDs for architects, engineers, and you know, people working in the trade would benefit from it as well. And it covers everything, just how to specify timber, timber frame, preservatives, durability, you know, all the common misconceptions, for example, about timber. They're covered in there and you know, guidance is given in terms of how to specify it correctly. The last point I made was demonstration. So timber frame, for example, is about 46% of all new scheme homes. So it's made great strides in terms of its market penetration. It's widely accepted by all the large developers. But what we need to do is dispel some of the myths and try and encourage the timber frame sector to use more homegrown. They use a lot of timber, but we need to get them to use more homegrown. So demonstration projects. And we have done some projects in the recent past with Glennon Brothers, Dempsey Timber Engineering. We built some homegrown homes in Longford, for example, for Longford County Council. We're looking at a project with South Dublin County Council this year of a similar nature, social houses on a site in South Dublin. Demonstration will give confidence to the timber frame sector that homegrown is you know, meets the grade. Demonstration projects like our own, we've built Avondale Beyond the Trees in County Wicklow. Some of your listeners may have visited the treetop walk there. That treetop walk is built 100% from homegrown Douglas fir. It's 38 metres high. So we can build complex structures from homegrown timber.
Avondale, amazing project, really. I don't know if you've been there, but I'm sure the kids would love the slide. Yeah, actually, you'd love the slide, I'm sure, on your own. but fantastic. And it must be a massive tourist attraction now.
It's a major tourist attraction. Like, it's a great draw for Wicklow, and big employer now as well. Like, there's a lot of people up there employed. So it's great to see, you know.
There's, what are the big opportunities going forward for Quilta?
On the wood side, it's obviously, and I won't steal the limelight from some of my colleagues, I think, who are coming here.
We're all right with that.
to talk about our own panel products. So there's some true innovation going on down in Medite and Smartply. You know, they're developing panel products that are, you know, very durable. They have, you know, they're guaranteed for outdoor use. So timber being used in outdoor applications has always been a concern for architects and specifiers. You know, will it shrink? Will it expand? Will it bend and warp in the weather that we have here? So they've developed some products like Medite Tricoya, which is, you know, durable and guaranteed 50-year service life.
Amazing product.
It's an amazing product.
Amazing product.
So, you know, talking generally about the sector, I mean, you know, there's certainly more innovation coming through from the sawmills. There's investments in technology like robotics. We're seeing a lot more, you know, technology going into the mills, you know, drying technology, cutting technology. The precision engineering that they can do now is phenomenal. And we'd love to see more on the engineered wood side. So we'd love to see in time the likes of mass timber being produced on the island. I think I mentioned some of the sample projects earlier where engineered wood is starting to become more mainstream. And I think the time will come when investments will be made. They're not cheap investments. So, you know, the market has to be ready and has to be right. But, you know, it can be, those products can be made from homegrown, and we'd love to see more of it, you know.
Des, it's been great having you in today. You know, thanks for sharing with us all that's happening in Quilta, and look, continued success to you. It's been a fantastic chat.
No, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Des.